Gamley, this is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Earlier this month, the Memorial Bridge linking Portsmouth with Kittery, Maine was completed after several years of reconstruction work. Formerly red-listed, the bridge cost more than $80 million to fix and reopened to much political fanfare and praise for its first-of-a-kind design. Meanwhile, though, more than 140 other state bridges remain on the red list, waiting repair or replacement. And if that wasn't worrisome enough, there's a pink list in the wings that includes structures likely to end up on the red list. Of course, aging infrastructure is a problem throughout the country, not just in the Granite State, but that's likely cold comfort for Chris Clement, Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Transportation. We're talking this hour with the Commissioner about the state's thousands of miles of roadways and, of course, its bridges, and more conversation lately about the revival of rail, both in our state's north and south, also brand new passenger airline service at the former Air Force Base at Pease. Let's hear from you this hour with the Commissioner. What do you see as the major transportation challenges facing our state? If you could fix one aspect of our transportation system, what would it be? And where do you think the money should come from to fund any improvements? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Commissioner Clement, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, just to start off, Commissioner Clement, before we get into all the roads and bridges and rail and funding and so forth, remind us how big our state transportation system is. Not local roads and bridges, but what you folks at the State Department of Transportation have responsibility for.
Well, Laura, at New Hampshire DOT, we're responsible for all aspects of transportation. So we're responsible for the 2,143 bridges, the 4,600 center lane miles of roads, the 24 municipal airports, the 459 miles of railroad, and then all the transit options as well, and then bike and ped. So we're responsible for pretty much everything that moves in terms of transportation.
That's a lot more airports and a lot more rail than I realized we even had here in New Hampshire.
We actually have 124 airports if you count all the grass runways in the state, but it's really the 24 primary airports.
And the buses and the roadways, remind us, give us the mileage numbers again, because, again, it's a lot more than I thought.
It's 4,600 center lane miles of roads, which is almost 9,000 miles of roads, state roads, when you look at it all in total. Bridges, I think I said it's 2,143 bridges.
Well, it's a lot of repair and a lot of infrastructure and a lot to keep up on. And earlier this summer, Commissioner Clement, you warned the legislature that if the state doesn't find more revenue for this big transportation system that you just described, the projects we say we want won't get done. A couple questions out of that. What sources do you recommend for us to fund our transportation system here in New Hampshire?
Well, let me back up a couple of steps to talk about how the funding works. We receive federal funds. All states receive federal funds, and we receive about $150 million per year in federal funds. And those federal funds go out, back out into capital projects like Interstate 993 and road and bridge work. We also have state funds. We have the New Hampshire Highway Fund, which is comprised of gas tax, which is about, you know, $125 million a year, and then registrations, which would make up about another $110 million per year, and then some miscellaneous court fines and fees that make up probably another $13 million a year. And that also goes out as well. We also have what we call the Betterment account, which is $22.5 million per year, and that goes out. We spend $12 million of that $22.5 million a year just in paving. We send $2 million out to our six districts, and they use that for paving. So that makes up our funding. Now, to answer your question specifically, where do I think the additional funding should come from? That's really a call from the legislature. They determine how much and where those funding sources, state funding sources, should be increased or decreased, and we're just happy to get the funding. I guess that would be our point.
Well, and you and I have talked about this before, Commissioner Clement, and you've said, hey, it's up to our elected leaders, you know, the governor and lawmakers.
Right.
But one could argue, Commissioner Clement, you know, you're the expert. You're the one those political leaders appointed to oversee transportation policy. So why not go to the political mat, if I could put it that way, for one source or the other? Why not just come out and say what you think?
Well, I think I have, and I think I spent, 18 months. I met with over 5,000 people out presenting all over the state talking about the need for transportation investment in the state. And I think that when I was out speaking, I was talking, educating in terms of what the current funding sources are and how they work. And the gas tax was one of them. And we talked about what the history of the gas tax is and when it started in our state and the last time it was raised. And it's been 22 years since that's changed. And I think that Senator D'Alessandro and Senator Morris brought forward Senate Bill 152 last session as it related to the gaming bill, which had a percentage of it that was going to go to fund
expanded casinos.
Yes, exactly. So part of that was going to fund transportation, I-93, for example. I know there was an element that they were hoping to get enough to pay the remaining $250 million bonds for I-93, which would be about $22 million a year. So I think when you look at all the different funding sources, there was a lot of discussion last session. We didn't get it done, but I think I'm very hopeful. I'm very confident that when the legislature comes back into session in January, there's going to be a bipartisan swelling that comes together to figure this out. I really believe it.
Is there one that you think is better? A higher gas tax, casino revenues, other sources, Commissioner Clement? Is there one that's more reliable or better than another?
Well, I don't know if one's more reliable or better than the other one. I think that the federal government may have their view. So let me go to answer the question from that side. So if you're looking at bonding, for example, the feds prefer gas tax because it's known, it's a trusted source, it's constant. Okay, so if you're going to go out and bond $250 million to finish I-93, for example, the feds and bond council would rather a gas tax or registration fee or something like that versus, let's say, a casino, for example, where the funds may go up or may go down. There's not a lot of we don't have a lot of history of that in the country, United States of America, in terms of bonding highway projects against revenue like that. So I think that the feds get a little anxious. Now, we from the state side, again, we're revenue agnostic. We don't care where the revenue comes from. We just want the revenue to finish I-93, to fix the 143 red list bridges and pave, get up to paving 500 miles of roads per year. That's really what we're looking for.
In these presentations to the legislature, one of the main projects, as you just said, has been, look, we need to finish this Interstate 93 widening.
Yes.
And I think you called that a road paved with gold for New Hampshire, right, in terms of its economic impact.
That's right.
Here's another way to look at it, though, Commissioner Clement. Some groups have said, look, in not that long a time period, I-93 will just fill up again with cars anyway. And why not just get to that point now and focus on getting folks out of their cars? Even in California, the so-called land of the freeway, the governor said a few years back, look, enough, we can't build our way out of these traffic problems. So what about a rethink there? Maybe we don't need to widen I-93.
I think we do. I think we need both. I think we need to finish the project, and we will. And I think we also need to look at passenger rail and commuter rail as well. And we're doing that as well right now with the New Hampshire Capital Corridor study. That's a project that started in February of 2013 this year. The study takes about 18 months. It was federally funded. It's a $3.6 million study grant, and we're just starting now. And by the end of calendar year 2014, the study will be finished, and it'll outline where passenger rail and where bus transit more or less makes sense, and then how that all fits hand in glove with Interstate I-93 from a vehicles on the highway perspective.
So you're saying we're looking at both?
I think, yes. Yes. The short answer is yes, we're looking at both. We're looking at passenger rail that we're doing the study, which was a big deal. I don't know if you remember, but it took two times to get passed through the Executive Council. We take this very serious in our state, which is good. But I really believe we need to finish the widening of Interstate 93. We need to have the mobility options. If there's one thing that we've heard in the New Hampshire Capital Corridor study is our residents want mobility options. That's both traveling in a car or, on your motorcycle, whatever, on the highways and freeways and turnpikes, as well as options to talk about for passenger rail.
What about the idea, though, that Commissioner Clement, and there have been numerous studies on this, that when you build it, they come. It'll fill up, and maybe even sooner than we think.
I'm not so sure. I think that, you've heard me say this before, this subject, this passenger rail subject, it's really polarized. You get both sides feel very passionately one way on either side. And I think that, again, we need to get the data. We need to see where it makes sense. And then we need to, you know, once the information and data comes in, make the tough decisions in terms of if we want to move forward or not. You know, it's going to cost something. It's going to, there's going to be capital expenditures to fix the rail line up from the state border all the way up to Concord. If it goes to Concord, that's, you know, millions and millions of dollars. And then also to operate the rail line every year, that'll be operating costs of millions of dollars as well. And we're going to have to come to grips with that.
Yeah, and as you talked about costs to the legislature, this was back in late June at a hearing before the House Transportation Committee. You said, look, if we don't fix this funding situation, I might have to lay off 600 people at my department. What's the impact of that, Commissioner Clement, on the roads, for those individuals, for the broader economy?
That's right. So We're projecting right now there's going to be a $50 million operation, a deficit in the highway fund by fiscal year 15. And then 1 year later, fiscal year 16 is going to be over a $100 million deficit. So we're looking.
If things continue as they are now.
If things remain the same, if no additional funding source comes, that's right. Thank you for stating that. So if all things remain the same, $50 million deficit, I'm going to project that we, New Hampshire DOT, are going to take $40 million of the $50 million hit. And when you look at what that means, it's about 650 jobs that would have to be cut in order to reduce our budget by that much. It's going to be people and programs that get reduced. And we're, as a matter of fact, we're meeting on Thursday, senior management's meeting on Thursday, and my message is going to be very simple and short to my senior team. I want to look at what a $40 million cut looks like, $35 million cut, 30, 25, 20, 15, all the way down. If things remain the same, I would assume there would be consolidation of bureaus within the department. There would be elimination, perhaps, of some functions that we do today. And our mission, to answer your question from the beginning, our mission will completely change. I mean, today, our goal is to have, after a snowstorm, the roads black and wet in 2.5 hours, meaning clear. That our snow and ice policy may have to change if we go down that path. We won't have as many people working in operations. We have about 800 people today. There'd be somewhat less than that. So now if a tree limb falls on the road, it's going to take longer to clean that up. The grass is going to get taller, for example.
All right. Lots more to talk about after a
yes.
short break. And we'll start taking your calls and emails, too. A couple emails have already come in. You can email us. Keep them short, please. exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And you can support this 24-hour news service by becoming a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle. Your $100 monthly gift to NHPR helps preserve independent and reliable journalism in New Hampshire. Find out more about NHPR's Leadership Circle and make your gift at nhpr.org. Becoming partly sunny around New Hampshire today. Chance of some scattered showers and an isolated thunderstorm. Highs today upper 70s to lower 80s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from the Grupponi Automotive Group, family-owned and proudly serving New Hampshire auto sales and service customers since 1924, in Bow, New Hampshire, and online at grupponi.com. And from Squam Lakes Natural Science Center in Holderness, presenting a Festival of Flight September 14th to learn about the wonders of flight and migration, nhnature.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire's Transportation Commissioner Chris Clement is with us on challenges facing the state's infrastructure, roads, bridges, rail. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. If you could fix just one part of our transportation system, what would that be? Where would the money come from for that improvement? And what do you see in general as the major transportation challenges facing the state of New Hampshire? We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Commissioner Clement, just before the break, we were talking a lot about your warnings that if you don't get more funding, New Hampshire won't see transportation done in the way that we've become accustomed to, and you described that. Let's talk just a little bit more about that, if we could, please. Many other states are dealing with these challenges. It's not just New Hampshire dealing with these problems.
Right.
And some of them are trying to get creative with transportation financing as the old gas tax model doesn't bring in as much as it used to. People are driving more efficient, fuel-efficient cars and so forth. What other models do you see in other states that you think New Hampshire might want to take a look at?
Well, Oregon, the state of Oregon, just recently, within the last actually 8 weeks, they have this pilot. It's called a VMT, a Vehicle Miles Traveled Pilot. And actually, Oregon was the first state in the country to come forward with a state gas tax. So they're pioneering both from the back when on the gas tax along now with this vehicle miles travel tax.
And so what, how does that work?
How it works is basically you're not paying a gas tax when you fill up at the pump. They're keeping track of how many miles you drive, and you get charged for every mile that you drive. So whether you're driving a Toyota Prius, for example, that gets very good gas mileage, or a big, you know, Chevy Suburban like I drive that gets very poor mileage, you're paying a fee, right? You're paying a fee to maintain the roads and the bridges and the infrastructure. And I think that you had mentioned when we were off air that more and more people are driving more fuel-efficient cars, which brings less revenue into the highway fund, which exacerbates the problem, and that's correct. So that's why Oregon is looking at this VMT tax.
Yeah, so privacy concerns probably will come up here in New Hampshire. We don't want Big Brother knowing how many miles I drive. It's none of their business.
That's right. That's right. And I think it's nationwide, not only in New Hampshire, but the privacy concerns are nationwide.
How do you address that?
That's the difficult one. You have to work through it. And I think you have to start now and start to get the public used to, you know, this change, if you will, and then eventually, at some point, I would imagine, at some point, Washington, the rest of the states are going to be working towards this type of vehicle miles traveled tax.
Also, when you set anything up, and I know you're not advocating this right now, just looking at it, and we'll see what Oregon does. Another issue that comes to mind for me when we talk about this is punishing those folks who live far out from their jobs. Maybe they work in an expensive area and can't afford to live in that area, so they have to live further out where housing might be cheaper. So there's a fairness issue there, too.
Right, exactly. You know, being equitable on all these types of situations is always at the forefront of the discussion, both, you know, certainly at the policymaker level. And it should be, frankly. It should be.
And then there are those who say, look, you know, the person driving the fuel-efficient, clean electric vehicle or hybrid should be rewarded versus you, Commissioner Clement,
right,
in your sort of gas hog. And you,
right, exactly.
That's what you called it. Shouldn't be rewarded. So in this system, the person who's using a cleaner car would pay the same amount as you pay in your less clean car.
Yeah, I think there would be some. I don't know the exact formula that Oregon is using, but I think that's the premise behind that. And if you look from a winter maintenance perspective, Laura, I mean, we spend the most on the vehicles that contribute the least. So if you drive a Toyota Prius, for example, they're very light in weight, and that means that we have to be out there more frequently in terms of plowing the roads and sanding because those cars aren't as good as my big gas hog Suburban, if you will, that pays more in the gas tax. So again, it's all balanced, but I think it's like everything else that I find in this job. You cannot communicate enough. Communicate, and educate in terms of what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it. You have to do this over and over and over to make sure that everybody understands it and is comfortable with it.
Well, and there are a wide array of needs and desires and limited funding to meet those needs and desires. So I hear you on that.
Yeah.
Let's go to our callers and emailers. The phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Your chance to talk with Chris Clement, New Hampshire's Department of Transportation Commissioner. You can post a comment on our Facebook page if you like, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Eric's waiting in Andover. Hi, Eric. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, good morning, Laura. Thank you for the time, and thank you, Commissioner Clement, for coming on.
You're welcome.
I had two observations, and the first one relates to the I-93 widening. I work in an industry that relies on rural infrastructure, and I'm very concerned that with the I-93 doesn't become a giant sucking sound for any additional revenue that's generated. I think, well, it is important to our tourism-based economy. There are other industries that are very reliant on the rural roads and bridges. And so just a kind of an observation that we need to make sure that funding is, you know, directed in a responsible way for support of rural communities. And then the other observation is on the funding. with the gas tax. And I know it's the legislature's ball of wax, but I'm concerned that when the process went through this year, that it was very much, you know, we need 12 cents a gallon, and that's, you know, my way or the highway, pardon the pun. I think there could have been more room for negotiation to, you know, a lower level that would have gotten you some revenue to at least bridge the gap to whatever other funding mechanism that may come into place.
Oh, Eric, thanks a lot for the points. And let's talk about both of them. I-93, the giant sucking sound for transportation money. It's a great point, Commissioner Clement. You know, there are other priorities that other people have in other parts of the state.
That's right. Eric, great question. So let me start with your first one. I-93 widening, it's the state's most important project in the state, and it's a project that we've been working on since the mid-'80s. We need to get this project finished. Laura's right. It's the road paved with gold. It's commerce. It's tourism. It's everything for the state. Also, as you pointed out, we have 900 miles of unnumbered state routes in the state, and they need to be repaired. They need to be upgraded, and a lot of them have fallen into disrepair because, as I said to the legislature late in the session, that we're right now because of funding constraints, we're keeping the good roads good. And it costs a lot more to upgrade the old roads. It's about $1.1 million a mile to do a total reclamation on a road that needs repair, a poor road, versus $50,000 per mile. To your point, I told the legislature during this legislative session in July that I would not be advocating going forward on any additional projects for I-93, the $250 million that remains, unless we got additional funding, because we cannot continue to put what limited funding that we have all towards I-93 where the rest of the transportation system falls into complete disarray. So I made that point very clear with the legislature, and I've met with some legislators during the summer to reiterate that point that we can't go out and bond anymore on I-93 until we have a dedicated funding source that pays for that $22 million per year note, if you will, for the 250 miles to finish I-93. So you're right. The second point.
Right about that I-93 is overshadowing everything else, or what do you mean by that?
Eric's point is right that we have to be, there has to be a balance that we can't put all of our limited resources into one project. And
well,
he's right by saying that.
And I know we want to talk about the way the gas tax increase was handled politically, but here's an email that feeds into that first point that you just made and that our caller makes. This is from Caitlin, who says, how do certain roads get a priority to be fixed, replaced? I live in downtown Portsmouth. My boyfriend and I always joke that we live in what was previously a war zone when we drive on certain roads. Obviously, that's an exaggeration, but how do certain towns get priority? Caitlin, good question. Relates to what we're talking about,
right?
Another
great question. So in New Hampshire, we have a 10-year transportation plan. We're actually just starting on that now. That starts up next month in September, and that'll go through December, and then we would give the 10-year plan to the governor at that time for her to sign and then pass on to the legislature and then hopefully become law by the end of July, the next legislative session. So all these projects that you see have been in the queue for some amount of years, some 10, some more than that, and they've passed muster in terms of working with the executive council, working with communities, because we have 33 meetings where we go out and meet with all the communities in all the different regions. So that's how these projects are done. There's a very defined political process. We've been doing it. So Governor Sununu was the first governor to really bring forward this 10-year plan, so it was done in an open, transparent way, and we've continued that on.
Okay, and speaking of political process, that was the other half of Eric's call. He seemed to be saying, Commissioner Clement, that the way this increase in the gas tax was handled could have maybe been handled differently, a little more negotiation, a little more give and take than just here's 12 cents and this is what we want.
Yeah, I the way this worked, Eric, is that when the 12 cents was derived, Representative Campbell came in the department. He said, you know, there's need for the communities out there. There's need for the state. How many pennies or what's the dollar value that it would take to make everything work? And when we ended up doing all the math. We were going to give communities, local communities, you get block grant aid today. We were going to increase the local block grant aid, which is aid from the state to those communities for their roads and bridge and infrastructures, by 51%. So your state aid program is going to go up by 51%. Funding for roads and bridges, specifically the state aid bridge program, we were going to double that. That's today, it's $6.8 million per year that goes out to the communities. Right now, we have 353 municipal red list bridges. It's much more than the state at 140 red list bridges. We were going to take that from $6.8 million. We were going to double that to almost $17 million.
To attack that red list bridge
list. To attack that problem.
That gives people the willies, frankly.
Right. And it's been $6.8 million a year since 1992. The state aid highway program is only $1.7 million a year. It's been that way since 1992. That $1.7 million goes out to communities. We were going to double that amount.
So this is the amount that you folks calculated it would take to address things in a reasonable way.
That's right. And it was also going to fund I-93. It was also going to fund the operational deficit of DOT. And it was going to make the municipals whole and the state DOT whole, if you will. So there was a rationale. There's a very big spreadsheet. I'd be happy to show it to anybody that wants to see it on how we came up with the numbers. So it wasn't willy-nilly. We didn't just say we need 12 cents. We backed into it in a very methodical, pragmatic way. That's how that 12 cents was derived.
So you guys did it, with your charts and graphs, and here's the numbers that we need. But politically, I think Eric's saying, could you have started a little lower? Maybe people would have been able to swallow 3 cents or 5 right. cents, then 12 cents.
Yeah, again, that's not up to me. I think that's up to the policymakers, and I think that Representative Campbell went about it. In my view, he was looking at it from a dollars and cents perspective. He wasn't looking at it in terms of how many pennies it would mean on the gas tax, for example. So,
well, again, Eric, thanks for the call. And Caitlin, thanks for the email. The number for you to join us as we sit down with Transportation Commissioner Christopher Clement is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Here's another funding idea that came in actually on Friday for our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, but it's more relevant for our conversation today, so I'll share it with you, Commissioner. This is from John in Carroll County. He says, why don't we double the fee at the Hooksett toll booth? John says, I go 26 miles into Maine. I pay $4 to gain access to the Maine Turnpike. I can drive the entire length of our turnpike, Interstate 93, for $1. So what do you think about that idea?
Right. So another great question. The turnpike system is a separate funding source within the department. So that we're blessed, New Hampshire is blessed that we have a turnpike system, but it's an enterprise fund. It's standalone. So the funding that we take in about $117 million per year in tolls, but all that toll money has to stay in the turnpike. So if we have an operational deficit on the New Hampshire Highway Fund side of the house, which we do, we can't go into the turnpike system and take turnpike funds out to solve a problem that we have on the DOT Highway Fund side of the house.
So That's separate.
So again, you have two buckets of money, if you will, the turnpike money, $117 million, and then New Hampshire Highway Fund, which is about $260 million. That's just for, it's funds the New Hampshire Department of Transportation, the Highway Fund, the Department of Safety at $80 million, and other agencies at $3 million.
So increasing the tolls wouldn't help this overall I-93 winding problem?
It would not. So the I-93 is part of the interstate system. It's not on the turnpike.
I see. I think a lot of people don't understand that.
Right.
Yeah.
There was 2 or 3 years ago, we were looking at, there was a federal government, Federal Highway Administration, USDOT, had this, what they called a demonstration pilot program. And they had what I called 3 golden tickets across the country. And if you could demonstrate the additional capacity for that new highway, for example, and you met all the criteria, Federal Highways would give you a pass, if you will. They would let you put a toll up on that facility that was once free, and then you could toll that. We started to have that discussion here in New Hampshire, and it didn't go anywhere. I'll just say that.
Our phone number for you to join us with your calls is 1-800-892-6477. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And up next is Mark in Portsmouth. Hi, Mark. Thanks for waiting. You're on the Exchange.
Hello, Laura.
Hi.
I am personally a little disturbed when I hear another scheme to take money from the taxpayers. And I understand the commission's problem because I agree with them. We need to fund roads, but we have to decide where we're going to take it from. I mean, are we going to fund education? Are we going to fund UPT? Are we going to fund tourism? The citizens of the state have to, because it's obvious, given the resistance to the gas tax, that taxpayers are set up with spending more money or having more money taken. So where are we going to take it from?
Where do you think we should take it from? Yeah, where do you think, Mark? You said we need to fund transportation, so.
Well, I personally feel that the EBT system is grossly abused in this state, and I'm sure that there's money in there that could be, you know, found easily.
EBT, is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah. Does that mean electronic benefits transfer? You mean the welfare system?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So find efficiencies, find problems in other aspects of state government, and fund transportation that way.
Well, that's an interesting point. But, Mark, thanks for your question. Again, I would go back to the way that we currently fund transportation. It's New Hampshire Highway Fund. It's gas tax revenue. It's your registration revenue and court fines from the state police and so on. That's how we're funded today. And I think that, you know, the social services, if you will, that's another side of state government. That's what we call the general fund, where everything else is funded out of. And boy, I'm not the right person to talk to as it relates to the general fund. What I can tell you about the general fund, I know that it's very financially strained, and that there's always difficult discussions. I know Commissioner Nick Topis was on last week. There's always more need than there is funding, but I think that it's a difficult discussion, and I'm certainly not the one to talk about the general fund.
Well, again, people have their own priorities, you know, fund this road or that road, fund this priority, not that priority.
Right.
It's hard to make everyone happy. Is there a philosophy, a governing or management philosophy as to how to make the most happiest, if you know what I'm getting at?
Boy, if you know what that is,
yeah,
tell
really
me.
Bottle it and sell it, right?
Well, I think in general, to answer your question, I think that the way I look at New Hampshire DOT is that we're trying to increase our value proposition to our customers every day. We're trying to be the most lean, most efficient, most nimble organization, and just really stretching the taxpayers' dollar as far as we can. I mean, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to show value, and we're trying to earn the trust and continue to increase our credibility, not only with state policymakers, but also with the residents. And I think that if you can do that, and if you can, again, educate and communicate how you are spending the taxpayers' precious dollars, that they will believe you, and then they'll, you know, if you could show the return on investment, I believe the public will give you more funding.
All right. Thanks for that call, Mark. And more of your calls and emails after a short break, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, battling wildfires in the West. Then, a new novel set in Norway about family secrets. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Raff Young and Pignatelli, with law offices in Concord, Nashua, and Boston. National impact uniquely New Hampshire, on the web at rafflaw.com. And Heritage Plumbing Heating Cooling, offering tune-ups, repairs, and efficient air conditioning systems, including ductless AC for homes without ductwork. Online at justcallheritage.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, New Englanders look back on the March on Washington 50 years ago and its legacy for us today. If you were there, we want to hear from you. Send us an email before the program to exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today, we're sitting down with Transportation Commissioner Chris Clement, looking at New Hampshire's roads, bridges, buses, and rail. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. And Commissioner Clement, I did want to talk to you about buses, because there has been some projects in the works on that, some news coming up about new projects in the fall. First of all, the latest bus project I've heard about is new service from Concord to the Manchester Airport. Tell us a little bit about that and how it's going. It's been a couple months, from what
I
understand.
That's right, Laura. So this project just started up. The Manchester Transit Authority is running this service. It's 12 daily trips per day from downtown Concord to Manchester and Manchester Airport. The service has been good. I think we've had in July it was about 1,300 customers. About 42%, I was doing the math, 42% of those riders went to the Manchester Airport. So I think that's positive. I know Mark Brewer at the airport would like that to be 100%. But again, this is a new service. It started on July 1st, so it's during the summer months when a lot of people are away and traveling. So I'm hopeful that this fall and this winter that service will pick up even more.
So that goes from the Concord bus station to directly to the airport, or does it stop in downtown Manchester as well?
It stops in downtown Manchester and goes to the airport as well.
1,300 people in the first month.
That's correct.
Wow. Is that what you expected?
I think it was we were surprised. And I think that MTA was surprised as well that it was the ridership was as high as it was.
There's another.
So
bus
we were pleasantly surprised.
Yeah,
yes.
Another bus service that you were telling me before we went on the air that's coming this fall.
That's right. That's the East West Express, and that's a bus service that's going to start in October. It's going to go from Portsmouth to Epping, the Epping Park and Ride on Route 125, to the Manchester Boston Regional Airport, and then downtown Manchester on Canal Street. And again, that's October time frame. That'll be four ADA accessible Sprinter vans. That's going to be operated by Flightline. That's a 3-year FTA grant. It's about $2.5 million. That'll provide operating funds for 3 years. And we're projecting the first year of ridership. Here's another number we should remember. We're projecting it, the first year being about 13,000 passengers. And the following year number two, about 24,000 passengers. And then year three, around 30,000 passengers, so a total of about 68,000 passengers over this pilot for 3 years.
Wow, so that's interesting because people have talked about East-West bus service for a long time, Commissioner Clement.
That's right.
I can't tell you how many conversations I've had about this topic.
That's right.
People have said you can go anywhere up and down I-93 on a bus, but you can't get east to west.
Or our I-95 as well. So we're excited about this. We're also excited about the new service in downtown Concord that goes to Manchester too.
All right, let's take another call. This is Dick in Ware. Hi, Dick, you're on The Exchange. Go ahead. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, hi. My focus has always been in airports, and recently the New Hampshire legislature created a New Hampshire Aviation Trust Fund to help support the maintenance of payments at New Hampshire's publicly owned airports, but of course they didn't fund it, and I was wondering if the commissioner would respond as to whether he thinks there's any chance of dedicating existing funds that are collected from the aviation community, such as aviation fuel tax and aircraft registration fees, to help fund that trust fund.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling in, Dick.
Yeah, another great question. So, Dick, we take in on a yearly basis about $1.1 to $1.2 million per year in registration and gas tax fees from the airports. And today, 75% of those aircraft fees, so let's say it's $1 million in round numbers, so about $750,000 goes off to the general fund. And then the remaining $250,000, which is not a lot, only 25%, goes off to the 24 airports to be used for capital projects, as you noted. Last week, I was at the Plymouth Airport. We had met Councillor Burton up there. He was doing his 24 airport tour, as he does every year. And the manager of the airport there said as well, I said, boy, if we could go from a grass runway, for example, to a pavement runway or concrete, we could grow our business. It would be great for the businesses. We're also a college community, and we have a lot of affluent people here that would like to come in here and use this facility. How can we get more money? What can we do with the New Hampshire Aviation Trust Fund? So I think your question is timely. I think that the aviation community in the state is going to rally this fall. I know there's a lot of talk about how do we get with the policymakers and explain that we need more funding. We want to invest in our airports. Airports are vitally important. They're definitely a major part of the transportation link or the hub in our state. And once these airports are gone, they're gone forever. And we need them for commerce. We need them for national security. commerce, so on and so on.
What's the impact, though, if you expanded the smaller airports, like the example you gave in Plymouth, on the big airport, and that's Manchester? From what I understand, they still haven't recovered from the cut in flights during the recession there.
That's right.
Things are still too slow at Manchester Airport, from what I hear.
That's right, Laura. And I think it's like with on the road and bridge side, there's competing interest. You have more need than you have funds. And we're constantly reevaluating and constantly juggling how are these funds used. I mean, this is again, not to punt to the legislature, but this is another thing that the legislature has control over. I don't. The funds come in both federally, and then we push them out. We're a block grant state. We take in about, $30 to $35 million of federal funds every year, and we push those out. And a big percentage go to the three big airports, Manchester, Pease, and Lebanon, and there isn't much that goes off to the smaller airports. So Dick's question is spot on, and I hear that all the time from the small airports saying, Chris, we need more funds. We want to, invest in our airport. It's a challenge.
Well, and speaking of Pease, I do have to ask you about the new airline passenger service coming to Pease Airport, if it hasn't even started yet already, with flights to Orlando for some crazy low price, at least in the beginning. What are your thoughts on that, Commissioner Clement, the return of passenger service to Pease?
That's right. I think for people that live in the seacoast, it's good news. I think the last air carrier that came into Pease was Skybus. They were there for a relatively short period of time, but I think the service that went to Orlando, and it's Sanford Orlando, was very good. They were flying new aircraft. I think that the general public around there liked it. And then we had that big spike in fuel. Fuel went up very high, and the economy went down. And the both of those colliding was not a good thing. To answer your question, I think that it remains to be seen. I think that the Seacoast wants the service. I think they're flying out 2 days per week initially. And you're right, they had a $99 fare initially as a startup. I don't know how long that will go.
Yeah, I didn't jump on that quickly enough, by the way.
Yeah. They're probably all sold out.
Well, and if this takes off, pardon the pun, again, does that take away business from Manchester Airport?
Potentially it could. I mean, again, they're both competing for passengers. We're in this area of this 50-mile loop between Logan and Portland Jetport, and now Manchester Airport, and now Pease. So you have these four airports competing for that same customer base. So, yes, I would believe that one's going to take from the other.
You mentioned a moment ago when we had our caller talking about aviation and smaller airports. You said, yes, there's money that we collect, some of which goes off to the general fund. Got an email just on that topic from Representative Brad Bailey. He's in Grafton. He says, there is plenty of money in our transportation fund to do the work that needs to be done on our roads and bridges. Unfortunately, he says, the governor and legislature are allowed to take money that should be spent on roads and bridges for other budget issues, which makes it more difficult for Commissioner Clement to do the job he wants to do. Representative Bailey says, I appreciate the work that the commissioner and his employees do season to season and year in and year out. What about that? That has been an issue that has come up periodically, the so-called diversion right. of dedicated transportation funds to other areas. There's a perception that this happens a lot. I'm wondering if it does.
Well, I think what Representative Bailey is referring to is that right now, there's approximately $83 million that comes out of the highway fund to fund other agencies. $80 million goes to the Department of Safety, and then $3 million goes off to other agencies like the Department of Justice that they work with us. They're our legal counsel, if you will. For me, my point on this is that the Department of Safety has every right to be part of the highway fund as the Department of Transportation. We build the roads and bridges, and then the Department of Safety protects them and enforces those laws.
So that feels appropriate to you.
For me, it does. I mean, if we take the Department of Safety out of the highway fund and put them in the general fund, as the discussion was going last session, we're going to have a bigger problem in the general fund. So you're just moving that problem from one fund to another. So,
well, and here's a similar question on that from our Facebook page. Ryan says, does DOT pay for police details on highway maintenance? Could eliminating details reduce DOT expenses? Ryan, thanks for that.
We do. We on every project that you see, or most every project that you see on our state highways, we are paying the state police to be there. If we weren't paying the state police to be there, then we'd be paying some private entity. So yes, the short answer is yes, we do pay them.
And yet, what about the second part of his question where he says, could eliminating these details save you money?
They could, but you have to have enforcement presence on these projects. You can't just be out there with, you know, doing the project without flaggers or enforcement. Every year now, and it seems as these electronic devices, you know, like smartphones have become more and more prevalent, we are seeing a spike in accidents. We had one of our maintenance people hit by a car that was going 40 miles per hour. The person had
Ouch.
His head
wow.
down, and luckily he wasn't looking when he got hit by the car, so he got hurt, but he was not killed. So ever more, we need police details out on the roads, even in the Spalding Turnpike expansion that we're working on now in Newington. That's a $260 million project. We actually added another state trooper as a detail out there because we were seeing people still speeding through the work zone. I mean, we reduced the speed. We have flashing lights saying slow down, and people are still – everybody's in a rush today. So, yes, I think that we need police details. Yes, it's a small amount that you have to pay for safety insurance of making sure our people are protected. So
wow.
It's money well spent.
It's interesting because as we make progress combating drunk driving, we have this rising tide of distracted driving with
right.
all the devices that we have to play with while
That's
we drive.
Right.
Interesting. Here's another email that just came in from Nancy in Sugar Hill. She says, last year in a legislative report, DOT identified I-93, 95, 89, and 101 as the lone transportation corridors available for the potential burial of transmission lines like Northern Pass. More recently, Northern Pass has suggested that they think they have the right to bury the lines along any public road anywhere in the state if they so choose. Does DOT stand by its report to the legislature, or do you as commissioner believe that Northern Pass has a claim to selectively bury lines on any roads it chooses? I also want to let Nancy know that we're planning a show on Northern Pass, not next week, I believe, but the week after. So we might get more into that later, Nancy, but can you offer some broad comments on that, Commissioner Clement?
I think that when we have requests from utilities or from anyone else to come into the states right away, there's a process. There's a process that we follow. It's a process that's been in place for a very long time. And ultimately, these decisions are made by the state, the SEC, the State Evaluation Committee. So it's not just DOT. We have, for example, we move methane gas from the Turnkey Landfill in Rochester all the way up the Spalding Turnpike into UNH. And UNH uses that methane gas to heat most of the college.
Under the road.
Under the road. And I think Northern Pass is no different. We look at Northern Pass as another request coming in, and we'll process it like we do any other request, and it will go before the Site Evaluation Committee, and those members will vote whether we do it or not.
Well, and here's another email that just came in from Julia in Durham. She says, can you ask Commissioner Clement about any planned extension of commuter light rail? And you talked about this a little bit earlier, Commissioner Clement, but not in detail. As I understand, just this week, you folks at DOT held a public listening session about the possibility of commuter rail from the MBTA in Boston to Plastow.
Right. So as it relates to Durham, we have the Amtrak today that rides on that line.
The Downeaster.
And that's working very well. The service has been very positive for Amtrak. I think it's their most successful, actually, service if you talk to Amtrak in the country.
And that stops in Durham, Dover, and Exeter.
That's correct. Your point as it relates to Plastow, you're right, Laura. We did have a public listening session this week on August 22nd. There was about 75 people that came out to the Plastow Town Hall from Plastow and Atkinson to listen about what this study is going to do. So it's a $659 million congestion mitigation air quality study. And what we're just looking at the feasibility of just extending the MBTA today south and north into Plastow. And if there would be, you know, the study would look at ridership numbers, it would look at potential, where would you build a station, where would you build a layover station? There's a lot of discussion regarding layover, saying, you know, some folks do not want to have a diesel train sitting running idle in their backyard, if you will, and then having the fumes and the noise. So there's a lot of discussion around that. What would the capital costs be? What would the operating costs be? How often would the train run? So these are the same types of things that we're looking at for this Plastow commuter rail extension project that we're looking at with the New Hampshire Capital Corridor project, which is on another line.
That's, correct me if I'm wrong, please, Boston, Lowell, Nashua, Manchester, that's the Capital Corridor, and ultimately
Concord,
up to Concord.
Concord, that's right.
You know,
and
I was interested.
Manchester Airport as well. The big part of the New Hampshire Capital Corridor is the Manchester Manchester Airport component.
I'm glad you cleared that up, because most of the conversation about this in the past has looked at Boston, Nashua, Manchester, Concord, Plastow's, you know, a couple towns east of Nashua.
Yeah, that would be another line. That's actually on the down eastern line.
I see. So it would connect to that.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that email, Julie.
Great question.
We did need to talk about that. One last question about rail for you, Commissioner Clement. I read recently about the possibility of freight rail upgrades in Coos County. What's the hope for that upgrade?
That's right. So we had a Tiger Fund that was put forward by the St. Lawrence and Atlantic Railroad.
That's federal money.
That's federal
money.
That's
a
Tiger grant. We also applied for a Tiger grant for the Sarah Long Bridge replacement in Portsmouth as well. So right now, this Tiger grant is for 20 miles of continuous welded, what we call 286-pound track. Right now, that 20 miles on that line is currently 100-pound track, which was put in many, many decades ago. And it allows the trains to run at half loads or and run at very slow speeds, and it's really constraining the North Country. So we're hopeful if we get this Tiger grant, we'll be able to carry heavy loads. It'll improve the economy up there with the businesses, because we'll be able to go move the trains faster and with heavier weights, which is really needed in that area.
All right. Commissioner Clement, we'll have to talk to you maybe in 6 or 7 months and see what is happening as the new legislative year opens and some of the funding issues come up that we talked about earlier. But for now, thank you very much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Christopher Clement. Again, he was deputy commissioner of the Department of Transportation in 2008 and became commissioner in September of 2011. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Catherine Muzzy. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, remembering the March on Washington. We talk with African Americans in northern New England about the civil rights protests that helped change the course of racial history in the U.S. 50 years later, Americans are still contemplating the legacy of that day and debating the extent to which Dr. Martin Luther King's dream of racial equality has been fulfilled. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on NHPR. New Hampshire weather for today becoming partly sunny. Chance of some scattered showers and maybe an isolated thunderstorm. High temperatures today upper 70s to lower 80s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Panema Green Family Golf Center in Amherst, providing families with outdoor fun including golf, mini golf, lessons, driving range, and food. Details at playamherst.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
Good morning. It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Steve Roberts of George Washington University, sitting in today for Diane Rehm. Close to 4,000 firefighters are struggling to contain the nation's largest active wildfire. So far, it has burned more than 230 square miles near Yosemite National Park in California. The blaze threatened several thousand structures, and at this point, it's estimated to be only 20%.